is CBS Eye on the World with John Batchelor. Here's John Batchelor.
This is CBS Eye on the World. I'm John Batchelor. Pacific Watch is Jeff Bliss. The earthquake, immediately, Northern California. Jeff, a very good evening to you. How big was the quake and the damages, and what does this tell us about California in the summertime, in the drought, and the threat of wildfire? One more thing, Jeff, when I heard about this earthquake, one more thing. Good evening to you.
Good evening, John. We had a 6.0 earthquake along the California-Nevada border up in Northern California, just probably, you'd say, east of Sacramento there. Not too far from Reno, near Stockton. So it's all up in that, in the old gold country area there. And it was something that was felt throughout the entire Bay Area. It was felt down in Sacramento, down in Lodi in the Central Valley. And it shook a lot of homes, knocked dishes off of shelves, that type of thing. There were some damage to some buildings and facilities in the area, nothing major. 6.0 is a pretty big earthquake. We certainly had bigger ones, but I can tell you that even my own daughter who lives up in Reno didn't feel it, which is strange because it's near there. But then I had friends who live in the Bay Area. They felt it out there and they thought it was very sharp and lasted a long time. This had been a series of quakes over the past day or two. And so that's not unusual. You get a swarm of quakes, but this was certainly the largest.
We move from earthquakes to temperature and water. First, we'll start with water. I think you sent me a bulletin that there's now recommendation of reducing water usage in L.A. or San Francisco only?
We're talking about the whole state for the most part. There's a couple counties where they're not going to, but essentially Governor Newsom is asking residents throughout the state to cut their water use by 15%. And he's extended an emergency drought declaration to certainly all the Bay Area counties, which have been hard hit, were hit early. This is something we're going to find throughout the state as time goes on. The entire state's going to be under this recommendation, and then it'll move, I'm sure, to a full-on regulation, declaration, law, whatever you want to call it, that'll put the clamp on the water usage in the state. This is a serious drought. It came early, and we know it's going to get much, much worse.
Cut water use by 15%. That doesn't sound profound, but does that mean no watering of lawns, no washing of cars? Is there a practical way we can interpret that 15% cut?
That's certainly right up there. Those are among the first things that they ask people to stop doing. They say if you're going to be putting in any kind of front yard, backyard, lawn type of situation, what you're going to do is go to drought-resistant plants, cactus, succulents, things like that. But when it comes to actual water usage, yeah, they want you to cut out things that aren't absolutely necessary. Cut back on the car washing, cut back on the lawn watering, and find other ways to save water and energy. That's also a connected concern.
And the concern about water also is that right now, we don't know, but are they projecting? Because it's so early, Jeff, and because you have this heat wave, are they projecting? How much can they ask you to reduce water? Is there a number that you can remember that was severe?
I have not heard an exact number for the state before because we have so many different climates throughout the state and so many different water situations, even though we're getting hit by the same drought. So it'll come on a region-by-region basis. But I've heard as much as 30% before, which is pretty drastic in the overall scheme of things. As you said, it doesn't sound like much. 15% doesn't sound like a lot. But when you really pencil it all out and you start deciding where you're going to ration your water, it does make a difference. You start thinking, how am I going to use the laundry? How long am I going to shower for in the morning? Are they going to put restrictions on those types of things? It is a serious matter. And it's very serious when it comes to businesses, especially agriculture. They're very concerned about what's coming down the pipeline, so to speak.
The last days, there was an enormous heat wave in British Columbia. But you tell me now that the heat wave is in Death Valley, which sounds appropriate. But what does this tell us about the summer ahead?
It's a very good indicator of just how hot it's going to be. We're getting into the peak of the summer season. And it's going to probably break a record this weekend and exceed 130 degrees. I mean, it's just unbelievable. I've been in temperatures of 110, 115, and it's mind-numbingly hot. It really does sear your brain from the inside. I can only imagine what 130 degrees is like. I do know that when people drive out there or walk on the pavement out in Death Valley at that temperature or close to that temperature, their shoes actually will melt into the asphalt. So we're looking at a very difficult time out in the deserts, and it's something that's going to translate into difficult heat problems for us in the rest of the state and the West for some time.
Wildfires, the pacing you report is well ahead of 2020, which was a bad year. There's the Tennant fire, the Sugar fire. I believe the lava fire has been contained. So are these fires unusual? Are they in parts of the state you would expect to see them?
The fires are in the more rural wilderness areas, and you do see fires in those places in the summer, particularly when it's hot and you have lightning strikes out there. Had a lot of vegetation build up over the years. There's been some poor timber, lumber management out there, wilderness management. So you're going to have these fires anyway. But when you have it this early and this much acreage burning this early, it really does portend bad things for the entire state and for the West.
You report, now, I said before, the earthquake was too much. You got drought, you got fires, you got a political situation that's less than stable. And now we have a tornado fire? I don't understand this, Jeff. There was a tornado with fire in it, and this is the Tennant fire. What did it look like?
It actually looks like a small tornado. It doesn't look like those giant ones you see in the Midwest or South, but it is sizable, and it's big enough to be picked up on weather radar and even sometimes from aerial photography. These are fire whirls, W-H-I-R-L-S, that spin around in rather large, kind of vertical fire flames that are going up. It occurs in extreme conditions when ground level winds come into contact with a fire whipping into the air. It's probably scarier looking than it really is in terms of the damage it does, but really it's fire. It's moving at its own pace very rapidly, and it's nothing they can put out. So it's one of those forces of nature that really, you know, it makes you think twice about being out in a fire zone. I've seen similar things out there in wildfires in California when I've been out in fire situations. And I'll tell you, it makes the hair stand up on the back of your neck.
Fire preparation, Jeff. Living in California near wildfires or where wildfires have been, are people well informed? Do they prepare for evacuation? Sometimes the stories reach the East Coast that people are resisting getting out and they're despairing over their houses. Are they prepped like a war is coming?
People are prepped. And I see people preparing for these types of things. And whether it's just better public education or resources that are being made available, but people see what happens when you decide to prioritize property over life. And while there are always going to be people that run back into a fire to go get something they think is very valuable, more valuable than their life, I think we're seeing people more and more say, wait a minute, we can replace that. That's what we have insurance for. And if we plan enough that we can put things aside or create safety barriers, we might either be able to save the facility, the house, or we might be able to lessen the damage or at least get away with whatever we want to take from there, our valuables and such. So you see that in California, for example, myself, my wife, and our family members will have things like a go-to bag, which has clothing and other necessities in it that you can just pick up, or it'll already be in your car and you go. And we have those for earthquakes as well. But you see that in other communities. So what they'll do is they'll put sprinkler systems around their houses or actually on their roofs to help dampen the area. They'll cut brush back way away from the house or the facility, so it lessens the amount of fuel there near the place it can burn. And then they'll have evacuation routes and plans saying, for example, if the fire reaches here, you take the car with all the valuables and go. I'll stay and fight as long as it's safe for me to do so. And many, many people plan along those types of plans, and they seem to be working.
Finally, Jeff, 30 seconds. California Independent System Operator runs the electrical grid, issued a new flex alert for Friday. That is today, these last hours. Are you asked to turn the temperature down to use less electricity?
Exactly. Use less electricity, especially during peak time. So turn down the air conditioning, please. Make sure you do your laundry later at night. Try to make sure all the other electrical appliances are limited. It's a serious matter. Again, here we are in the middle of the heat wave, so the demand is very, very high.
Jeff Bliss is Pacific Watch. This is CBS Eye on the World. I'm John Patchett.